I know that no spouse is perfect, and I know that no marriage is perfect. But as I stand up before you this morning, and as I've thought about and worked on this lesson over the past week, I don't want you to be in a bad marriage either. Because that's not what God wants for you. What God wants for you is for you to be happy and blessed in Jesus Christ, for you to have the kind of relationship that's spoken of in the Scriptures, and I think very amply illustrated by lots of godly people. But we've got to face the facts that sometimes we're with people and there's red flags. And you have to ask yourself the question, what is going to be my response to all of the red flags that are waving? For a younger person, it sometimes is very difficult. Because you have the feelings and the romance, the dreams, the excitements, and the longings. And let's face it, thinking about red flags, in light of all of that, is pretty dull. But this morning, for all of the people here and for all of the people who will listen to this in the time to come, you're going to learn something that I think is very important for you. It's wisdom for you to apply to the people that you're going to be dating and then make the best spiritual choice, healthy choice, that you possibly can. I've run across more than one person. I don't know why it happens this way, but it's more women in particular who have told me, I'm not kidding and I'm not playing it up, who have literally told me that when they came home from when they had returned home from the honeymoon, they knew they had made a mistake. And you think, how can a week change things? Guys, a week doesn't change things. They had the red flags, and they just chose not to listen. So we want to impart some wisdom. We've got several people, again, who are single in this room this morning. We've got a lot of people, I think, are going to listen to this lesson, who are going to use the outlines, and who are going to, I hope, benefit from a study looking at all of these different ideas from many, many different angles. I boiled it down to six questions. What do I look for in a spouse? And we're going to be alternating because not all of these are on the men and not all of these are on the women. There's a lot that both can learn. And then one more thought before we jump into this. There may be a lot of people who are actually in marriages who are struggling. And what you're going to learn, hopefully, this morning are some areas where behavior is acceptable and where behavior isn't acceptable, either from you or your spouse. And then changes can be made. Let's go to the book of Proverbs. Question number one. How do they handle negative feedback? How do they handle negative feedback? An ungodly person can't accept it. They're going to chafe. Now, at the first, you might just get kind of a coolness. You might just get the silent treatment. But as time goes on, there's going to be more and more anger. And as there's more and more anger, it might even, in some cases, lead to violence. Other people may just make you feel guilty for criticizing their behavior. Now, Proverbs chapter 9, I've asked you to turn there. Proverbs chapter 9, we're going to read verses 7 through 9. Proverbs chapter 9, 7 through 9. He who corrects a scoffer gets shame for himself. He who rebukes a wicked man only harms himself. Do not correct a scoffer, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he'll love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will still be wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. How do they respond? Do they humbly accept correction that's given in love? Because I'll tell you, it's very, very easy. When it comes most of the time to children, the earlier that they're corrected, the less you have to do later on down the line. I know that doesn't work all the time. But that's actually a pretty decent general rule to follow. So you find someone and you're dating them, and they begin to kind of work out some of the issues in the way that they're being treated or the treatment that they're giving. You work that out fairly early, and you're going to have a lot better time. But it takes the right kind of heart. Let's look on down in chapter 12. Go down just a little bit for me. Chapter 12, we're going to look in verse 1. Chapter 12, verse 1. Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. Does your spouse, does your partner respond favorably to negative feedback? If the answer is rarely or never, you might be in a pretty troubled relationship. And that might be the first good sign for you to understand there's something terribly wrong. Proverbs chapter 15, let's look in verse 32. I mean, multiple times in Scripture, Proverbs chapter 15 in the 32nd verse, he who disdains instruction despises his own soul. He who heeds rebuke gets understanding. If the person that you talk to does very well at heeding the instruction and then implements the change, you're probably dealing with pretty good relationship material. Because you're not only seeing someone who's humble, but as we've just read just in these few Proverbs, you're seeing someone who's wise. And someone who wants to do better, especially when they're found to be wanting. How do they handle negative feedback? An important, important question. Another one also that you need to keep in mind. How do they handle your needs? How do they handle your needs? A very thoughtless person has no empathy. Now, they may be able to fake it, but they have no real empathy. Empathy is the ability to see a situation and then enter into it with you in the sadness and in the sufferings and in all of the difficulties and enter that with you. If this person has no empathy, this is what will happen. If something is wrong in your life, they want you to get over it. If you're sick, it cramps your style. If for some reason you're no longer able to meet their needs, it annoys them deeply. If you're sad about something, mad about something, or glad about something, they just don't really care to be a part of that. That's empathy. And brethren, that goes an incredibly long way to building a relationship that's healthy. Colossians chapter 3, we're going to look in verse 12. Colossians chapter 3, look in verse 12. Now, I know that Colossians chapter 3, and really I could go ahead and expand this to just about every verse that we're going to notice today. These are written, and these verses are generally written to be used as our relationship between Christian to Christian. So I would read Colossians chapter 3, verse 12, and we would all think, this is the way that we need to be to each other. But don't lose sight of the fact. This is the way people who are dating need to be toward each other. And I'll tell you, this is the way that spouses had better be toward each other. Colossians chapter 3, and we're going to look in verse 12. Look what it says. Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, then bearing with one another and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against another, even as Christ forgave you, so also you must do. This is a person who is interested in your life. They are interested in what you hope for, what you dream for. They want to know what makes you tick, because everything revolves around the fact that they understand that you're part of God's creation and that you're special because of God's creation. It's not just a matter of what you add to their life. And I don't mean that to be too veiled. I mean sexually or a number of other ways. It means the value that you have because you are one of God's creation. That makes you special. And your spouse and the person that you're dating ought to evaluate and consider you for that very reason. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. I'll refer to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7 at least once more in the lesson. But 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, especially as we are pretty much addressing an audience of Christians this morning, this is the way that you look at each other. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as the weaker vessel. And, here's the part. And being heirs together of the grace of life. That's how they see each other. As fellow heirs of the grace of life. They know what you're about. They know what you are. They know what makes you tick because they see you as someone special. Again, that's empathy. So how do they treat you in that regard? Let's talk about differences of opinion. We need to talk about differences of opinion. Let's go to Romans chapter 2 and verse 8. Romans chapter 2 and the 8th verse. So Romans chapter 2 and the 8th verse. So I think I'll say this, and if you guys think that I'm wrong, let me know. I think that maybe in society, and certainly maybe it's in my generation, if you are significantly younger than me and you think this is different, then I'm actually glad to be wrong. So here it is. I think a lot of young women just learned growing up that if they have a difference of opinion with their husband, then they just grin and bear it. And she's godly the more she just learns to grin and bear it. I'll say that as far as my generation is concerned, hope it's better now. It needs to be better. That's just selfishness. That's just selfishness. Romans chapter 2 in the 8th verse, I've ask you to turn there. Selfishness will destroy a relationship. It really will. So in Romans chapter 2 verse 8, but to those who are self-seeking. Now in the context, self-seeking isn't speaking about the relationship between a man and a woman, but the same concept is still there. To the people who are self-seeking. And they do not obey the truth, but they obey righteousness, indignation and wrath, tribulation and anguish on every soul who does evil of the Jew first and also of the Greek. It's evil. If you're in a marriage and you're self-seeking, the principle still remains the same. It's evil. And God will judge it. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Let's look in verse 24. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and looking in verse 24. 1 Corinthians 10, 24. Let no one seek his own, but each the other's well-being. Each the other's well-being. How many of you had 1 Corinthians read at your wedding? So let's look in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and let's read the 5th verse. Love does not behave rudely. It does not. Second phrase in the verse, it does not seek its own. Said another way, it is not self-seeking. It looks out for the other person. How do they handle disagreements? How do they handle differences of opinion? You know, a good mate is willing to compromise in those areas where compromise is necessary. Not everything, obviously, spiritually speaking, can be compromised. But when it's appropriate and when it's necessary, they will do that. Understanding that sometimes in a marriage, for whatever reason, an issue is very important to one or the other. That's why sometimes marriage is called a give and take. They're biblical principles that you don't compromise on. But marriage has like a million little things that have to be decided on all of the time. From the moment you say I do until the moment you put one of them in the ground. And all during those times, handling disagreements means that if it's something that's important to them, then I have to make sure that I can work with that. I have to make sure. I go back to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. I make sure that I dwell with my mate with understanding. And part of that understanding means that I understand the concept and the process of give and take sometimes. And that in handling the differences, I don't always have my way. It's not my way or the highway. You know, I've met a lot of people in my life like that, and they are not pleasant to be around. How do you handle differences? Let's go on to our fourth question. How do you handle communication? How do you handle communication? There are communication tactics, I think, the only way that I can say it. There are communication tactics that have the potential to really destroy a marriage. So let's run through several of them. Very, very wide-ranging. Want to do the best that I can to give you some examples of what to stay away from. Does he tell jokes that let you in on what he believes about different subjects? Racial jokes, sexual jokes, dumb blonde jokes. You ask him about it and he says, "Oh, I was just joking." Maybe, more likely not. Just my experience. More than likely not. Does she avoid giving straight answers? Does he use guilt to get you to do what he wants? Does she want you and does she want others to pity her? When you communicate, do you feel intimidated by him? And so again, willing to give in. Does he expect you to read his mind and then get angry when you don't? Does she blame you every time something goes wrong in the relationship? Does she say negative things about your family or your friends or your job? Is she constantly correcting you? Is she critical of you, even in small ways? Does he tell you how to wear your hair, what type of clothing, how he wants you to act or to look or to behave? Have you ever caught her in a lie? Or in a half-lie, a lie by omission. Lying is a relationship killer. A relationship killer. You marry a liar, you're in for a life of confusion and chaos. That one's for free. Does he go out of his way to tell you that he would never look at pornography or cheat on you or lie to you or drink? Someone who's hiding will do that. Again, my experience, general rule, take it please as a general rule. As a general rule, people who aren't into that stuff, it doesn't come into their mind. So what do they not feel like they have to do? They don't have to tell everyone, "Oh, I don't do that, I don't do that." Again, it's kind of like the idea of what kind of jokes do they tell? The element of joking about it all of the time kind of maybe opens the door a little bit to understanding what's in their heart. It can be the same way. Can be the same way for all of these issues. Look at pornography, cheating, lying, and all of that. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29. Ephesians chapter 4 in the 29th verse. Ephesians chapter 4 in the 29th verse. Here's the kind of communication. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. General rule, written to be between Christians, but can you communicate something that's graceful to the person that you're dating? And certainly, can you communicate something graceful to your spouse? Look on down in chapter 5 in the 4th verse. Continues in chapter 5 in the 4th verse. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather the giving of thanks. So we need to be encouraging and we need to be edifying. We need to be spiritual in our communication. And this isn't just to people who are in the next pew. It needs to be within people who are in relationships with each other. Let's look in Acts chapter 11. A good example. I didn't put a lot of examples in, but we will stop for this one. Acts chapter 11. And let's look in 22. Acts chapter 11, verse 22. Then news of these things came to the ears of the church in Jerusalem. They sent out Barnabas to go as far as Antioch. And when he came and he had seen the grace of God, he was glad. And he encouraged them all that with purpose of heart they should continue with the Lord. For he was a good man, full of the Holy Spirit and of faith. A great many people were added to the Lord. Here was someone with a positive benefit on humanity. He was glad and he encouraged them all that with purpose of heart they should continue with the Lord. Is that what you get out of the person that you're with? Or do you get anger and do you get manipulation? Do you get all of these little snarky remarks that try to control and manipulate them? Manipulate you? Or do you get encouragement that with purpose of heart you should continue with the Lord? How's the communication? Communication is the number one way that you're going to interact. What's it like? Is it encouraging and edifying? Or is it something that's angry, insulting, and manipulating? If it's angry, insulting, and manipulating, you need to think about changing up. Because that's going to be a decision that serves you very, very well. Next up, let's ask another question. How do they handle themselves? And again, this question is one that is going to be wide-reaching. How do they handle themselves? Again, just kind of splitting this between men and women. If you need to reverse the genders, most definitely do that. Is he chronically late to everything? I don't just mean a little bit here or there. Don't put this in the position of making this kind of decision just based on a little bit every once in a while. Is he chronically late to everything? What does that show? That can show very little regard for everyone else. That can show that the mentality that that person has to have is always being in control. Romans chapter 12 and verse 3. Romans chapter 12 verse 3. Brethren, some of the things that we do are very innocent. Some of the things that we do come from very, very deep-seated items in our psyche. Romans chapter 12 verse 3. For I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. How do they think about others? How they think about others is going to be reflected in how much they respect their time and how much they respect their word to be together, to meet up. Does she want to control your time and get jealous when you spend time with other people or when you cultivate other relationships? Look in James chapter 3. Again, this is such a big, big element of control. And I've heard about this a lot. And interestingly, I've heard a lot from both genders on this one. In James chapter 3 verse 16, for where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. A relationship that's partially propped up by jealousy, again propped up by control and by manipulation, is going to be a relationship, look in James 3 verse 16, where evil resides. You don't want that. If it can't change, you need to get rid of them. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 verse 10. Had this come up? Not relative. within the last 3 years or so. 2 Thessalonians 3 verse 10. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this: if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. Does he constantly change jobs because he was mistreated or unappreciated at work? Does he constantly change jobs because he's mistreated or unappreciated at work? Seems relatively benign. Here's my suggestion: get out. Get out. You want to know why? It's because if every person that he comes in contact with very quickly wants to end their relationship with him, you'd better do it too. You better get out. I'm going to leave it at that. And I've seen it play out over and over and over again. Proverbs chapter 15, and let's look in verse 18. Proverbs chapter 15, let's look in verse 18. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 18. How does she treat people? How does she treat family members? How does she treat people in traffic? How does she treat servers in restaurants? Tells you a lot about a person. You got to look. There's the flag. You see it? Proverbs chapter 15 in the 18th verse. A wrathful man stirs up wrath, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. How they treat someone in traffic? Tomorrow might be you. And then you're in it. And you're in a mess. And I mean a fight like you never thought you were going to ever have. Pay attention. Is he open and honest about his past, or is it like pulling teeth to get him to open up? Colossians chapter 3, and let's look in verse 9. Colossians chapter 3, let's look in the 9th verse. Colossians chapter 3 in the 9th verse just simply says, do not lie to one another. Do not lie to one another. If there is hiding going on, and I mean, again, I'm switching up the genders as we go along, but it doesn't matter. If there's hiding going on, it might be that in the beginning of the relationship, you sense it, you know it's going on, but you just kind of accept it. And I understand, you're probably thinking, it's okay, he'll tell me about it when he feels like it. You need to make sure he feels like it sooner rather than later. Because that constant element of always wanting to hide something from you will not serve you well as you go into marriage and then spend years together. It won't. And you can look at it a host of different ways. It may not serve you well together as far as your physical relationship is concerned. It won't serve you well financially. It won't serve you well as far as trying to raise children. What's he like? Will he open up? Will he tell you about parts of his past? Or is it something that is just going to obviously always keep something that's secret? Look in Luke chapter 16, verse 11. Here's a big one, just very closely related to the idea of working. Luke chapter 16, verse 11. Is he a good steward? Is he a good steward of money, of time, of talents, and of resources? Luke chapter 16, verse 11. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit your trust the true riches? So you've got unrighteous mammon, and Jesus, I believe, in Luke chapter 16, verse 11, is just making a different distinction, and he's trying to make the distinction as far apart as he possibly can. You've got mammon, and mammon isn't necessarily unrighteous. It's just what you do with it. But he says, you've been entrusted with that. We all go out and we have jobs, and we're entrusted with our money, just like we are with time and talents and other resources. If you can't be shown to be a person who's responsible with that, then are you going to be responsible for the weightier matters of spirituality? So, if this is a person who, as you're dating him, wastes his money or wastes his time, got a lot of things that he should be doing, but he just can't seem to get going and do it, think down the road, because that's only going to get more complicated, I promise you. And once you're married and children come along, here's a man who's got to be biblically defined as the spiritual head of the household. That means making decisions. That means working hard. That means using everything that's been entrusted to him in the best, most spiritual way. So how does he treat all of these very good things that's been given to him? If he's able to show that he's using them wisely, you've got some really good relationship material. Hang on to that. But if not, maybe there's another decision to be made. Let's look in Matthew chapter 7, verse 21. Matthew chapter 7, verse 21, let's ask about her for a little bit. What is her motive for doing things? Why does she do what she does? What's her motive for doing it? Okay, so does she seem motivated to do what's right to avoid negative consequences? Does she seem to do it to manage an image? Does she seem to just do stuff because she's wanting to be admired by other people? Or maybe getting the sympathy of other people? Or does she do everything in her life, in Matthew chapter 7, verse 21, either directly or indirectly? Again, life's made up of just 100,000 different decisions, some of them directly related to your spirituality, some of them indirectly. Matthew 7, verse 21, look at this. Not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but who will? The one who does the will of my Father in heaven. Now that's something that's deep and abiding. You know, what is their reason for doing something? Is it because they want to do the will of God? Let's look in 1 Peter chapter 2 in the 9th verse. In 1 Peter chapter 2 in the 9th verse, we can color this one a little different way. You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, His own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. Does she do what she does? To try to proclaim the praises and glory of God in her life. You got someone like that, you've picked someone very, very well. All of the other stuff that I said, to try to avoid negative consequences or to try to manage an image or to try to garner sympathy, that's not so good. That may very well be a pretty good red flag. Let's ask one more. Does he respect boundaries? Does he respect boundaries? Because someone who is controlling and manipulative does not. In fact, they try to seek to break down every boundary that they can. Saw a relationship one time where a young man and a young girl got to dating, and he began to systematically deconstruct the boundary that she had with her mother and father. Now, over time, he pretty much had pulled her completely away from mom and dad. Now, once he had pulled her completely away from mom and dad, she pretty much would do whatever he wanted her to do. That's not healthy. It's not. Does he respect your boundaries? Or does he try to pull them apart? 1 Corinthians chapter 7, let's look in the first verse. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and the first verse. I've got to bring this up. It is uncomfortable, but I've got to bring it up. Girls, maybe you want to present yourself, 2 Corinthians chapter 11 verse 2, as a chaste virgin to your future husband. 1 Corinthians 7 verse 1. Now concerning the things of which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Paul is saying it's good for there not to be sexual immorality in a relationship outside of marriage. That's a boundary, and it's a big one. for girls who have been raised in godly homes? Does he respect that? Or is it always something where trying to get you to commit sexual immorality? That's not respecting a boundary. Again, you don't respect that boundary, I promise you there's going to be a boundary down the road that's really, really difficult to give up. Let's ask just one more. How do they handle conflict? How do they handle conflict? Let's go to Psalm chapter 51. How do they handle conflict? This one is very, very important too. Great, great judge of character as to how you handle conflict. So Psalm 51, we brought this up just a little bit earlier. Now I just want to develop it a little bit more. How do they deal with negative feedback? So now let's kind of consider it just a little bit deeper. Psalm 51 and 3 and 4. When they hurt you, are they willing to say they're sorry? Psalm 51, 3 and 4. I acknowledge my transgressions. My sin is always before me. Against you and you only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, that you may be found just when you speak and blameless when you judge. Do they then change their behavior? Because let's look on down in verses 13. Down in verse 13, then I'll teach transgressors your way, and sinners will be converted to you. There's change in behavior. Deliver me from the guilt of bloodshed, O God, the God of my salvation, and the tongue shall sing aloud of your righteousness. Very different than the attitude of sinning. Verse 15, O Lord, open my lips, and my mouth shall show forth your praise. Instead of being happy to go and commit sin. So, will they just say that they're sorry to get you off their back? Do they make excuses? Do they blame everyone else? We've all met people that no matter what happens in their life, no matter what, it's never their fault. Ever. You latch on to something like that, you're going to deal with a lifetime of heartache. Genesis chapter 3. This began early, by the way. Genesis chapter 3, and let's look in verse 12. Can they take responsibility for what they've done? Can they take responsibility for what they've done? So here in Genesis chapter 3 verse 12, well, the man said, well, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate. Did you eat it? Yeah, I did it. But it was her fault. It's her fault. You ever met people like that? Never, ever, ever do anything wrong. Always someone else's fault. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 11. Here is some good advice. The lesson's coming to an end, so I'm losing all of these different elements of giving you good advice. So here's one more. Don't marry childish behavior, because that's childish. Someone who can't take responsibility for anything that they've done is immature. Paul said, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11, when I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. When I became a man, I put away childish things. Make sure you pick someone who's put away childish things. Because if they put away childish things, then the way that you enter into conflict is going to tell that. You cannot have a relationship with the absence of conflict. Let me just say that. It doesn't exist. But conflict can be good, because you're taking differences, and someone may genuinely be right and someone may genuinely be wrong, and you're changing that behavior to where both of you are doing right and doing what's good, especially in the sight of God. Conflict can be good. But not if you're always left bewildered and confused and wondering if this issue ever got fixed or not, or if this person's actually going to live up to the promises that they made. Don't marry childish behavior. It's never going to be something that works out for you. So, why did I choose these six questions. These six questions were chosen very carefully. These six questions were chosen because they were taken from people who were in years-long abusive relationships. And these were the elements, I just took them and put them in a question form. These are the elements that they were most likely to tell someone else about as a warning before they got into their own abusive relationship. So, if you're able to look out for these, you're going to do pretty well. And we need to make sure that we understand, no one has all of these traits, but we can sometimes see very distinct patterns of something that needs to change. If this is a person who seems humble, again, going back to our first question, if this is a person who seems very humble and very likely to change, then you can work with them. And if they show evidence of change, the Bible would refer to it as fruits of repentance, then that's going to set up very, very well. But if it's always reluctance to it, if it's always constant fussing and fighting about it, if there's always these little, elements of control and of manipulation, guys, you may just be in the wrong place. We need to leave with some questions. We need to leave with asking, where are you? Are you desperate to be married? Do you feel unworthy of a good spouse? Are you someone who feels unworthy of love? Because if you do, you need spiritual health. Because you are worthy of love. And if you're in the sound of my voice this morning, there's a very, very good chance that you are indeed a child of the King. And that means that you deserve someone who's going to treat you that way. They are not easy to find. But that's what you need. Because that's going to help you be fellow heirs of the grace of life. And one day, be able to serve God together to the point that you can be in heaven with one another. And I hope that you can pass through the rest of your life. There's so many just unanswered, nebulous areas about what heaven is going to be like. But if I imagine heaven as a place where I have consciousness of other people, wouldn't you want your spouse to be the person you most want to be with in heaven? It can be if the right decisions are made. It can be if the right kind of person is chosen. And that's what we need. That's what we want to be. And hopefully that's what everyone wants for themselves. Because you are a child of the King, you deserve it. But this morning we want to leave because I've said almost everyone within the sound of my voice is, but there may not be everyone in the audience this morning who is a Christian. So we're going to give you the chance to become one. And I hope that you've seen that even though it's been a little bit off topic as far as salvation goes, the Bible opens all kinds of keys for you. And it's keys that can help your life be immeasurably better. There's going to be some difficult parts in it, and the Scripture can't even take that away. But it's going to be immeasurably better because you've learned the wisdom from it, you've decided to do the will of God, and you've decided to be someone who shows the glory of God's praises in every area of your life. You can start that today because we're going to sing a song and we're going to give you the chance to come up here and tell us that that's what you want to be in your life. So please take that chance. If you're someone that needs to change, maybe even something that we've talked about in the lesson has made you see, you know, there's a part where I'm really falling short in this and I need to be better. Maybe I need to be better and I need to show it to my spouse. I don't know what your situation might be. But if it is, now's the time for that too. We want people to be encouraged. Hang on to the Lord. Cleave to Him, just like Barnabas did with people. That's your invitation. Come up here and respond to it, please, while we'll stand and sing.